This is an ABC podcast.
ABC Sport.
It's over and late.
End of the over.
Bows are flicked off.
We're heading off for a refreshment and a meat pie.
And that ends the morning session.
That is lunch.
You're listening to Grandstand at Lunch.
On your radio.
ABC Sport Digital.
And take us with you on the ABC Listen app.
The Adelaide Test is underway. 35 degrees is the forecast top. Australia winning the toss and no hesitation in batting first. They're off to a good start with Jake Weatherald and Travis Head both getting through the first 40 minutes until...
In comes Archer around the wicket. Ball's short, tugged away to the leg side and is caught. He got a top edge there, shoveling away off his hip. Looking to hit the ball away into the leg side, and Smith has taken the catch, running up from behind the stumps, and England at least now have got a wicket.
So just bobbed one up in the air, and Smith able to take an easy catch with the gloves on. So they had to wait three quarters of an hour, England, for their first wicket. They had to wait only six balls for the second.
Here's Cass bounding in round the wicket and balls, and it's driven hard into the offside and caught. Caught at cover. Crawley taking the catch. And England have taken two wickets in two overs.
So all of a sudden, 2 for 33, the Australians, and the repair job was on. They were given a little bit of assistance, though, when Usman Khawaja was put down.
Fleury getting to drive, edge on, a spill at second slip.
Dropped again.
Big, big chance gone begging.
He went on to make 41. That's where he is at the lunch break at the end of that two-hour session. So 41 not out, Usman Khawaja. Manus Labuschagne's on 19. 2 for 94, the Australians. The rescue job is on after being 2 for 33, a 61-run unbroken third wicket stand unfolding between the two Queensland teammates, Manus Labuschagne and Usman Khawaja. Welcome to Grandstand at Lunch on day one. My name's Corbin Middlemass in the beautiful broadcast box at Adelaide Oval. It is one of, if not our favourite cricket venue in the country. One man who I'm sure will have it number one on the list with daylight second is the Premier of South Australia, the Honourable Peter Malinauskas. Premier, I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Corbin. Thanks for having us. It's been a spectacular morning thus far.
Always a very hospitable state, South Australia. We love coming here. We're lucky enough in the footy season, obviously, to come for Gather Round. And you hosted us last night at a dinner, which was excellent. So thank you for that. But where else would you rather be in the world than here in Adelaide the week before Christmas?
This is something different, though. I mean, I've been lucky enough since I was a kid. Dad signed me up to be a member of the SACA, and so I've gone to a lot of Adelaide tests, but I've never seen one that's had as much anticipation as this. I can honestly say that. And I think that's obviously the Ashes, but it's also this concept of the Christmas test. You know, we've now got this platform, 7-year deal locked in, the test match that's quite close to Christmas. I think it sets it up beautifully, and we've seen a lot of people travelling from other parts of the country to enjoy it and hopefully have a good time as well.
Why is it a good thing that it's a day test as opposed to being a day-night test?
Well, this is interesting, right? So it divides opinion. And that, in a healthy way, I'm a supporter of a mix, right? I do like the day test. Now, I'm saying this as a patron as much as anything else because I appreciate the commercial value that the day-night test represents for Cricket Australia and broadcasters and everything else, but... I do think there is a magic to having the day test as well. There's something traditional about it. You roll in the morning. Part of the experience is getting your seat early and just soaking up that atmosphere. And you could feel it. I don't know what time you were here, but you could feel the energy this morning. And also the Red Bull test just provides for a longer test match. And I think that's important. So I got to say, I like the fact that we've now got a bit of Red Bull and Pink Bull. Alternating it is a good option as far as I'm concerned. And certainly the crowds that you've seen here already speak for that.
Is it designed to have the people that attend the cricket flow into all the pubs and the restaurants and everything post-play?
That's definitely a motivating factor from our perspective, right? Because when you've got the day-night test, people sort of go home from the cricket. Whereas tonight, you're going to see an absolute influx of people coming from the stadium, walking across that footbridge in a matter of minutes, and then being in our bars and restaurants in town, and they're looking forward to a good night's trade. I note that... Travis Head made an observation that I think has some merit, that there'll be some people out the back that might not be able to get into an establishment in town after a day like this one, but a lot will, and that's a good thing.
Did you have to trade the pink ball test for the pre-Christmas slot? Is there a chance we could have, almost like the tacos ad, we could have both going forward, that it could be a pink ball test and pre-Christmas?
Absolutely. You will see that as part of the arrangement, and... The team at the South Australian Cricket Association, Will Rayner, Charlie, of course, as the CEO, has done a great job. And I think they've negotiated an arrangement with Cricket Australia that gives this test the prominence that it deserves. And, you know, I'm gonna sound a bit parochial to a national audience here, so, you know, forgive me. I mean, there's something special about Sydney and Melbourne in their own right. But this is the most well-attended test in the country outside of the Boxing Day test. On a per capita basis, the numbers blow every other test match out the water. And that's because, you know, and it's hard to explain to someone who hasn't been here for it. It's not just the test match, it's the festival, or out the back as it's often described. And that's expanded this year. So they've got a room for 10,000 people out the back of the Western Stand. And it is, I walked past to come in here, and it is heaving. So already.
You don't have to be a member to be in the Village Green.
Okay, so you do have to be.
You do have to be a member.
But through active inquiry, you can normally find a way.
Yep.
Because members can get an associate pass. But what we've done as a government, we've partnered with the Cricket Association, the SACCA, and also Cricket Australia this year, is to create and seek to replicate that environment outside the eastern side of the stand as well, the non-members side, so that people can sort of enjoy that experience without being a SACCA member. So it's really a genuine effort to make this a festival,
yeah,
as much as a cricket event on its own right.
Yep, and so this is to bring in crossover crowds, not necessarily hardcore cricket fans, which, you know, a national series would appeal to, but you want to make this almost like what the spring racing carnival
is.
Yep.
Yeah, that is the right way to describe it. Yeah.
Yep.
You know, Melbourne's got their spring racing carnival, and obviously Sydney's got the Everest as well, and that is magic. You know, people put a bit of effort into coming along and thinking about what they might wear or whatever, but here is just a slightly toned-down version of the spring racing carnival in terms of expectations of dress requirements, to put it mildly, but that same sort of atmosphere that you're going for more than just the cricket. And there are countless people out the back and elsewhere outside of the ground itself today who are not Australia's, you know, not cricket lovers like you or I, and they're here for other means. And what is wrong with that?
Yeah.
Anything that brings people towards a sport and something that is a source of unity and a common language like sport is, I think is just exceptionally important at this moment in time.
It feels like, I mean, your government's clearly been pretty big on, you know, we want to be an event state. We want to bring big events to Adelaide. It felt like for a period of time it was Queensland. They got a bunch of events that came through, whether it was the World Cup. They had they brought Manny Pacquiao out to fight Jeff Horn, and they had a sequence of them one after another, sort of going back, you know, 2017 to 2018 times. And yet in recent years, you've got LIV Golf, you've got the end of the supercar season, you've got Gather Round, clearly, which for people, it's basically a magic round in the AFL where every team in the country comes here for one weekend, which has been a huge success. And you obviously got this featured test match that's played pre-Christmas. I guess what's next? What are you chasing as a government?
We've always got irons in the fire, right? But, you know, the methodology that we're applying, Corbyn, is no point in doing it unless you're going to do it well. Right, so we're only willing to invest as a state government where we see a return for the South Australian economy and the taxpayer writ large, right? And that's prudent. So our thesis, the governing model, is if we see an opportunity that elevates the state on a national or international platform that also derives an economic benefit in terms of interstate visitation, then the numbers work. But understand this, I mean, we see the power of sport, but not just sport. There are other events outside of sport. We see the power of sport, though, in particular, to bring people together, but also elevate the standing of the state to a different audience. And, you know, corporates who come here and invest here, we've got the fastest growing economy in the country at the moment. And, you know, that is a story that needs to be told, and you're not going to tell it by hiding your light under the bushel. So the state's got a story to tell, and we see these events being a platform for that.
Just on the golf, so Cam Smith's going to come in and join us in just a moment. Major champion, he's obviously going to be back for LIV Golf as he has
played.
Been.
It was so good to see him play well in Melbourne weekend before last. I was so happy for him. Yeah. We're all cheering that he got that playoff and pushed it. But he's been a great ambassador for the game and for our state as well with LIV Golf.
LIV Golf's been unbelievable, and other states had the opportunity to get it.
Yep.
A few of them balked, decided, look, I'm not sure about it. Came to Adelaide. It's been a huge success. And then the announcement in, I think it was last year, where basically he said, hey, we're going to redevelop North Adelaide golf course. We're going to make that basically the new home of LIV, which is stone's throw from us here at Adelaide Oval. How are you tracking, I guess, in your development there?
So we're set to release the plans in the not-too-distant future, very near future, around what that course design looks like. It's been designed by Greg Norman Golf Course Design. We're basically taking what is currently a public golf course run by the City Council and turning it into our aspiration to be the best public golf course in the Southern Hemisphere and one of the top two or three in the world. And just for the benefit of your listeners, you've got Adelaide Oval, which is literally across the river in the city, and immediately next door, like less than 100 metres away, is from the boundary of Adelaide Oval, is the North Adelaide Golf Course. And so we're investing in that and turning it into a pro golf course where you'll be able to tee off and you've got views of the city that are truly spectacular. So we see an opportunity there. Golf's growing like a chemistry experiment in Australia at the moment, particularly amongst young people and women.
Yeah.
Which is great for the game.
So you're basically going to have the world's best golfers playing on what was a public course.
And there's an investment from the state to make that happen. Mm-hmm. But we see it being not just good for the LIV Golf event, although that's absolutely true. The other 51 weeks of the year, members of the public will be able to play on a course that Cam Smith was playing on a week earlier.
That's pretty cool.
And that will draw, golf tourism's on the rise as well, so that economy works well. But golf is going through this huge surge in the country, and what LIV did was remind the rest of the world that we are a golfing country, right? And I don't think we get Rory McIlroy out to Royal Melbourne a couple of weeks ago without just reminding the world the way that LIV has, that punters in Australia travel for golf.
The Premier, Peter Malinauskas, with me on Grandstand at lunch. Australia 2 for 94, Khawaja 41 and Labuschagne 19. This is Grandstand Cricket on ABC Sport. Supercars final. I've got a question here basically saying, can you ask Peter what happened with AC/DC and the Supercars final? Where did they end up playing?
Well, they played inside the track, basically. We're just next to the main pit straight there, and they put on... I've never seen so many people in my life. I think there was between 65 and 70,000 people there. There were more people at the Supercars Grand Final, the BP Grand Final, than there was at the AFL Grand Final, right, on the day.
Wow.
So there was a crowd of well over 100,000. I think it was 270,000 or 280,000 across the 4 days. I'm not Australia's biggest motorsport fan, if I'm honest about it. I'm more of a cricket sort of footy guy. But motorsport enthusiasm in this country is real, and they want to see good events that are accessible outside of the Grand Prix, and this is the preeminent one. Plus, you got to see AC/DC, so...
That's pretty cool.
That was amazing.
And again, there'll be people that are going just for AC/DC, I'm sure, as often these things happen, and we see that all the time. I was at an event in Melbourne, I think it was... We're at the Spring Racing Carnival, and I think Fisher played.
All
of a sudden, these people came in at the end of the day, the racing had finished, they were just there to see Fisher as the best chance to be able to see him, and that's what these sort of crossover promotions can do.
Now, I see on your screen here, I hope I'm not being cheeky. Is that the crowd number, is it?
That's the crowd.
That's a big number.
49,569. That's the current count. So that will update throughout the day.
That I can't remember, and I could be someone could prove me wrong about this, but I can't remember there ever being 50,000 here at Adelaide Oval for the cricket. For the footy, yes, but not for the cricket. And I've got to say, looking around the place, that doesn't surprise me. And it's pretty warm too. So
I was out the front at 7:15 this morning, and the lines were incredible to get in. And
my father was there.
Yes,
he's got to
get a seat in the members.
He sits in the same spot every year for probably the last 40 years.
Did he get his seat today?
I haven't seen him, so I don't know. But he and I differ on this. He likes to sit at square leg. He's a bit of a traditionalist. So shout out to Dad. He's an avid listener. But I like to sit behind the bowler's arm.
We got the best seat now. Yeah, behind the bowler's arm is the way to go. Before you get out of here, Premier, your own cricketing journey. You told us a great story last night about your fandom in particular for the late, great David Hooks and obviously being a young South Australian cricket fan and an autograph hunter back in the day.
You want me to tell the story, do you?
I do.
Oh, God. So Dad gets me a membership as a young kid. That was my Christmas present. And then he gave me an autograph book. So I spent, and he let me with my mate just run around the oval trying to hunt autographs, right? We went everywhere. And I was lucking out all like days, devastated. And then finally, I was walking out the back and where the old chapel bar is and gents are standing there having a few beers, and I spot David Hooks. And I got my little autograph book. I just want that first autograph. And I thought, right, there's Hooksy. I'm going to line up here. So I patiently wait next to these fellas having a couple of beers. And eventually, this gentleman turned to me, David Hooks, and says to me, "What do you want, Froghead?" And I said to him, "Oh, Mr. Hooks, I'm so sorry to bother you. I would like your autograph, please." And his mates just start laughing in stitches. They thought it was hilarious. And I'm like dying. I'm a kid here. And so Hooksy turns to me and says, I'm really sorry, mate. And don't mind my mates laughing at you. Everyone thinks I look like David Hooks, but I'm not actually David Hooks. He's in Tasmania playing a Shield game today. And I will never ever forget it. I thought I was gonna die. I was absolutely mortified. But the end game,
yep,
was in that same Test match. I got autographs from two young fellas who weren't really well known on the world stage at the time. One was SK Warne, and the other was Sachin Tendulkar. And I got these autographs. They're on the same page.
Yeah.
I know. I can picture it in my autograph book now. And I didn't think much of it at the time. And now I look back on it and I thought, my word, I struck gold. So, but Hooksy would have been a far better bloke in life, real life. If it was actually Hooksy, yeah, I have no doubt he would have signed the autograph.
Have you still got the book?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's at home. I know exactly. It's in a keepsake drawer. It's falling apart.
Yeah.
But, there's a few names in there in the end. But, but that's the magic, right? Yeah. They're moments that you create for kids. And to see players doing that to this day is pretty special for all those kids that get involved.
Talk to me about your own cricket. We always talk to you and gather around about your footy exploits.
I was more footy than cricket.
Do you still play any cricket?
Nah. I've got mates who are diehards who stopped just recently. But I coached cricket. I wasn't very good. So I did a SACA coaching course. And I coached cricket for 8 years. And I loved every minute of it. I was a better coach than player, which probably tells you how bad a player I was. But I got a lot of joy out of it. The thing about cricket is time.
Yeah.
So much more time consuming than footy.
Yep.
So the cricket ended up falling by the wayside. But I love the game, and we're very lucky to have this here in Adelaide Oval as a spectacle for the country.
I was talking to Andrea Williamson, who's taking the Test match for us, and she told me some stories yesterday about when she used to come to the cricket with her dad and sat on the hill. I imagine as a native Croater, you would have had the same kind of stories. What are your earliest memories of coming to watch cricket here?
Missing out on autographs, you know what? I was thinking about some of the matches that I've been able to be witness to. There are so many highlights. I mean, I'll give you a quick three, my favourite, because mates and I were talking about this recently. Amazing Adelaide.
Yes.
You could feel that day something was brewing. And I remember racing in here from work and was lucky enough to be able to witness that extraordinary effort from Warne. The Test match, we never had any runs being made by South Australians here. South Australians haven't had a long track record of, you know, batsmen making big runs, and there was a real drought. And so Greg Blewett broke that drought, and him on debut making 100 here at Adelaide Oval that was the loudest I've heard the ground, I reckon, at cricket, honestly. But the other one, though, was that West Indies match, where we lost by a couple of runs or a run, and that was an extraordinary fight back. I think Tim May took 5 for 9 in that Test match, and then he had to bat it out along with, trying to remember now, Craig McDermott.
Yes.
And they made that last wicket stand go on and on and on, and the impossible was right there within our grasp, only for heartbreak to be imposed upon adoring fans that thought finally we're going to get over the West Indies. So they're the magic moments that this Oval's been witness to, and hopefully see more on the way today.
We love coming here, and I'm not just saying that because you're in the building. It's a great ground, and as a native Sandgroper, as much as I love, you know, the new Perth Stadium, this has done a great job at encapsulating the old and the new, and it's got a great character and a bit of feel to it.
What's it like at Optus? So I've been to Wacker to watch cricket. I went to an Ashes Test match at the Wacker.
When it's full, it's excellent. It's got all the bells and whistles. It's a brand new modern stadium. But I think now that it's constructed, and it's probably easy to say in hindsight and everything, if they just had a little open area where perhaps you could see the backdrop of the city skyline or the Swan River, maybe that would just sort of add something even more to it.
We've got here, Corbin.
Like there is
here. Yeah, come on. You're almost ready to...
I do.
Sandgropers are pretty parochial. Optus looks like a Coliseum, right? Which has got its own power. But this is different, and we like it that way.
And it's probably a good blueprint too for the SCG, where they've got the old with the old grandstands. If they're looking to do a redevelopment, why would you look anywhere else on what you can do than right here? Premier, it's a busy day for you, I know. A busy week. Appreciate your time, as always.
Oh, really appreciate it. All the best.
The Honourable Peter Malinauskas with us, the Premier of South Australia, right here on ABC Sport. His grandstand at lunch. We appreciate his time. Absolutely. 2 for 94 is the score. The Australians at the lunch break on day one. Usman Khawaja, 41, not out. And Manus Labuschagne is not out on 19. Just to update you on some other cricketing matters, you may have caught up with the IPL auction. Of course, the richest cricket tournament in the world. They had their annual auction last night. It was a mini auction. If you're wondering what's the difference between a mini auction and a mega auction, well, the mega auction is where the majority of the players go back into the pool and the teams almost do a reset, only able to keep a few core players at any one time. The mini auction is where most of the lists are established and there's only a handful of slots here or there that actually change around. And there are a number of Australians that were on offer, and market forces have it, given the fact that there's limited supply and demand, teams have a few options available. They might have a big purse. They go out and it's essentially get what they need in their to fill their particular needs. As Darren Lehman just sits back down and joins me during the lunch break. So the Aussies that went last night in the auction booth, Cam Green went for a cool $4.17 million to the Kolkata Knight Riders. He becomes the richest, or it is the richest bid on an overseas player ever, the third highest bid in the history of IPL auctions, which a little bit stands to reason. It's always, you know, the next great player that's available at any one time as, you know, numbers go up and up and up. But that's big bucks.
Well, he did well for the Mumbai Indians, didn't he? And he can almost win the IPL on his own. He does, opens the bowling, gives you more options. He can open the batting, open the bowling, and catch as well. So it's not an issue at all. It's one of those big ones, big winners for him. We've got an absolute big winner hopefully coming in at some stages. But Cameron Green, he's one of those guys that you just go, wow, that's a life-changing for him and for anyone that gets that sort of money. So he'll be pretty pleased.
Josh Inglis went for $1.4 million to the Lucknow Super Giants. That's Justin Langer's team. So he'll be playing there next year. Other Australians that went, Ben Dorsius for $750,000 to the Punjab Kings. That's Ricky Ponting's team. Mm-hmm. Same team that picked up Cooper Connolly for $500,000. Jack Edwards, same price, $497,000 to the Sunrisers Hyderabad.
Good buy, that one.
Yeah?
Boy, yeah, he can play. He played really well the first BBL game I watched. He's got some talent. He'd be an all-rounder pushing Bo Webster in a year or two. Those two will be fighting it out, I would think.
And then Matt Short, $249,000 to the Chennai Super Kings. So he's going down south. So well done to those six players that went. Guys that went unsold, no Jake Fraser-McGurk, so no bids for him.
How are you with that?
Yeah.
One of your best mates?
The Rooster.
It's a little surprise because you could go cheap with him. Mm. He can still be a superstar.
Yep. Spencer Johnson, Sean Abbott, Riley Meredith, Jai Richardson, Will Sutherland. So none of them attracted any bids last night, went unsold. And then guys are skipped in the auction, which basically means, and you would have better insight to this than me, Buff, but basically they put the form out to begin with, and you have to mark down certain players to say, hey, we want him to go under the hammer and this guy and so on and so forth. If no one circles your name, even in the pre-auction stage, you get skipped. You don't even basically get put under the hammer. And that's the likes of Steve Smith, Daniel Sams, Bo Webster, Jason Berendorf, Ben McDermott, Wes Agar, Billy Stanlake, and Mikel Choudhury, Indian cricketer that moved to Australia and now is playing in Oz, obviously, for Tasmania. So Choudhury was another one of those who was skipped at the auction last night. From other nations, some other talking points out of it. So Patharana, he's the new Malinga, he's the slinger from from Sri Lanka. $2.98 million to the Kolkata Knight Riders. So they spent basically over $7 million on two players in Green and Patharana.
Not bad, because they can both open the bowling. That solves that problem and gives death bowling and an opening batter. That's what they're going with.
Liam Livingston, $2.15 million to the Sunrisers Hyderabad.
Good wicket for him to play on. Flat at Hyderabad. That gives him a good chance because he's one of those blokes who can bowl, but his batting potential is unbelievable.
And then a sign of things to come here. So Prashant Veer and Kartik Sharma. And you're probably thinking, gee, who are those guys? Well, a lot of the world was asking the same question last night. The Chennai Super Kings paid $2.35 million for both of them. And they are uncapped players. They have played limited domestic cricket. And as Harsha Bogle put it last night, this is basically, you know, buying low on the futures market, hoping that these guys become the next superstars of the game. So
they must be good. They must be real good.
Big investment, limited sample size, so we'll see how they go. But Chennai in the futures market big time last night.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.